Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to a Friday morning edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. It's snowing again in Knoxville as I'm recording this edition of the podcast. I don't know if it's snowing back in my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. For Wes, is it snowing down there?
No, just a very miserable little drizzle of cold rain. So very fitting for our conversation about the Falcons today.
Oh, it is very fitting. The 4-12 Falcons, the best 4-12 team in NFL history, in my opinion. They're on their way to a very interesting offseason. When you're looking at this roster, what season they've had, in your best guess, do you think they are going to use the number 4 pick like they did when they drafted Matt Ryan to take another quarterback like a Justin Fields or Zach Wilson?
You know, I really think that if the opportunity is there for them, okay, it's just going to be really hard if I were in that situation, you know, and who knows who they're going to hire as the GM. They seem to be leaning towards the head coach first, which is fine. You want the guy that's going to be making the cake, as Parcells says. You want the guy that's coaching to have a little bit of access to the grocery list, right? So that's fine with me. I'm a little bit more concerned with the next host of Jeopardy than I am with the name of the next Falcons GM. Just get the right coach in. But all that to say, whatever that GM decides to do, whoever it may be, Justin Fields is right there at 4, like I've seen on a few projections. I don't know how you pass him up. That's what I would do anyway. Look, man, the rumors of Deshaun Watson wanting to trade, I'm not so sure about that going down. It just seems like a long shot. And even if it were there, do we really think the Falcons would have the ability to land it and pull it off? I don't know. But I will tell you this. Justin Fields has already left the state of Georgia once. If he's there again, don't let him escape again, please.
What's going to make Georgia fans more upset, if they see Justin Fields win Monday night or Bama just winning again?
I think if you are a level-headed Georgia fan, you are not going to be upset to see Justin Fields win again. And I think America is in this strange situation where they're so tired of seeing Alabama win that they are probably pulling for Ohio State as well, in this weird twist of fate where Ohio State's one of those blue bloods that a lot of America, unless you're an Ohio State fan, be honest with yourself, you probably root against Ohio State most weekends. I think a lot of people are in that same boat as well. Now, of course, there's the Georgia fan out there that's going to say, I'm not watching, I don't care, I would rather both of them lose. That's not an option. And if you're competing against Alabama year in and year out, I mean, do you really want to see Alabama continue to add another trophy to the trophy case? I don't think so. I think level-headed Georgia fans are not okay with Justin Fields winning because your team isn't winning, but that gripe, you need to move on. It's time to move on. And it's sad because, you know, you log on to social media and you just can't help but get trolled as a Georgia fan about Justin Fields. But I'll give you the short version of this conversation, that if you are logically thinking and logically look back.
Well, that doesn't sound like sports fans.
Season, It's not. And no one's mind is going to change on this. It's easier and more fun to make a joke. And everyone does it about other teams. So Georgia fans have to take their licks on this one, but it was just bad timing.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields made the decision that he needed to make. Don't be bitter about it. And just enjoy the game and see what happens.
You got
if Ohio State can get enough people to play. I mean,
yeah. Well, Nick Saban's daughter, I was talking to my friend Matt yesterday about this. Do you think Saban, because he runs such a tight ship, pulled her social media? Like his grown married daughter, did he like just pull her stuff? Did he ground her, do you think?
Man, he could ground her. she could be like, I don't know what the family situation is there, but she could have multiple children. I mean, and he's going to ground her.
I think so
is
too.
Is there any question?
Yeah, I would just love to have been in the room for that. I would like, I can't believe, like, I would love to be in the room for that, that conversation. Like, what are you doing?
Well, that's the wonderful thing, Chase, about Twitter is it requires no thought. Mm-hmm. Twitter is an impulse machine, right? And there's clearly no thought in that tweet. And she's, you know, Twitter lasts forever. You can delete a tweet, and especially a tweet like that one.
Yeah.
It's more permanent. It's more permanent than anything you put out on the internet before. So no surprise there that she's going to be living with a little bit of that lashback, as she should. I mean, that was not the right thing to say when these things exist forever, but there's plenty of bulletin board material to go around for either team. Saw the Ohio State defensive back, Sean Wade.
Yeah, what are you doing, my man?
I mean, the bulletin board material, it all ends up canceling out because so many of these things exist on Twitter.
That's true. Do you have a score for Monday night?
Gosh, it's got to be high, right? I mean,
I think the over-under is like 75.
Woof. Yeah, I'll say that Alabama does win. I'll say they win like 42-38.
Okay. Yeah, I think they cover a little bit more than that. But we shall see. I'm concerned about Ohio State secondary and their pass defense, like 60th in the country. Back to the Falcons. I think they're gonna do it. I think this is bad enough where Matt Ryan played 16 games and they still went 4-12, and it's not on Matt Ryan. It's not. Some of it is, though. Like, it's like Matt Ryan defenders have gotten to the point where it's like, I can understand that he is the best quarterback in Falcons history. I've enjoyed the Matt Ryan experience. He is in his mid-30s now. He is now not good enough to carry a team, just drag a team to 500, a bad team, an injury-riddled team. He's just not that guy anymore. This was the best roster in football, people forget, like 2 years ago. And people trashed Dimitrov and everything else. I'm like, ESPN literally named this roster the best roster in football 2 years ago. This roster on paper is a win-now roster. So when you hear Matt Schaub say that, like, no, this team just needs to reload, I'm like, man, this is why this Falcons job is so difficult and so curious for me of who they hire to come in at GM and head coach. Because, like, I'm curious to see what lens they view this roster. They view it as, like, this is too expensive. We have too many guys that just are not going to win. We're going to have to pay Calvin Ridley soon. We're going to have to figure out what's going to happen with Jake Matthews, pay him again. We have Alex Mack maybe retiring. We have, I don't know. We just have a lot of different pieces that we're going to have to figure out here. And I don't know. Do they see it as a easy fix, or do they see it as, like, we need to tear down and trade Julio and ride it out with Matt? Like, it will pain me far more to trade Julio Jones than if they were to trade Matt Ryan. Are you right there with me? Because I just, Julio Jones not suiting up on Sundays for the Falcons is way more depressing for me than Matt Ryan at this point.
It's not the same because there are the championships attached to it, but I think regionally, locally, Julio Jones not having a Falcon on his helmet, to me, is like Michael Jordan not playing for the Bulls. You know,
it's just wrong.
But I mean, realistically, I mean, I'm not comparing the accomplishments. I'm just comparing the man in the suit, and I can't envision it. I mean, I guess we can eventually one day, because we see Tom Brady playing for the Buccaneers right now. And that's even a stronger tie that was broken. But it will be hard and it will be difficult to see that if and when that day comes. Unfortunately, I do feel like it's a more realistic outcome, maybe the most realistic outcome out of Matt Ryan and or Julio Jones getting traded, just because of where Matt is and where his contract is. That's a lot for a potential team to swallow with Matt's contract being, I think, $100 million.
Well, it's guaranteed. A lot easier to trade next year from everything I've read. This year, it's basically unmovable. Next year is the year that he would be able to get moved. It would still hurt, but not nearly as much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going back to Matt Schaub's comments about the reload. No, this is not a reload. This is territory where things need to be moved and faces that you're used to seeing in a Falcons helmet probably won't be there. And it could be a face like Julio Jones, but that's the number one question, right, for the GM coaching candidates coming in. I saw an article from the AJC the other day. They want to know how the Falcons are going to help them out with this cap situation. And it ain't easy. It's going to be like from day one, you know, how do we win? But how do we keep this roster intact, or how do we get players in that we can actually afford? When you say names like Calvin Ridley, Grady Jarrett, I mean, he's got to stay. You can't break him. You can't break the team up to that extent. But how do you keep this thing rolling forward, and how do you, as a new name, maybe a young head coach, that's the thing here, Chase. Every name, head coach or GM, I mean, these are up-and-coming guys that are already going to be looking to prove themselves. So will they be limited? Will they, you know, overplay their hand a little bit? I mean, I want somebody that has their head on straight, that comes in and is able to be creative. I mean, that's what a successful Falcons hire, GM or coach, will come down to. How innovative can you be? How creative can you be? You know, whether it's on the field with the offense that they run, because that's going to have to look different too, right? I mean, you can't keep doing.
I think we give Dirk Koetter three more years.
We can't keep doing Kyle Shanahan sequels, can we?
I mean, you can. The NFL's
Kyle Shanahan
doing that.
Actually being here.
I mean, we have like 13 coordinators in the NFL right now running variations of his scheme. So, I guess you
maybe
can.
maybe I'm just too hopeful here, and it's unrealistic. But I want to see something fresh, man. I want to see something innovative. That's what wins. That's what gets you into the Super Bowl. That's what
you heard it here first. Wes Blankenship wants the Falcons to hire Todd Monken. Or no, Jay. What's the other Monken? I get all the Monkens fit. What's Army? Is that Jeff Monken? Yeah, Jeff Monken. Let's run the triple option with Matt Ryan.
If the Falcons aren't running the wing T in 2021, I'm out.
Yeah, I got it. Last thing, and then you got to go, Wes. Can you describe what's going on in Knoxville and Jeremy Pruitt as Matthew McConaughey?
Oh my gosh. All right. So you got we all have a top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How rocky is your top? How high are you climbing to pursue the greatness that is all distilled within our hearts? Do you want to go to bed on Rocky Top, or do you want to stay up all night long cheering for that Vol Navy? As for me, I prefer a different color of orange. I got a burnt orange, okay, in my back pocket, Kemo Sabe. But you, as a volunteer nation, are you going to volunteer? It's on you. It's on your shoulders. Are you going to volunteer for wins, or are you going to volunteer for another year of Jeremy Pruitt?
That was great.
Hook 'em.
Oh, God.
Put me on the spot there, man, but hey, I appreciate that. That was good. You got to keep me on my toes, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you're on the last podcast that's independent, Wes. Got to go out with a bang.
I hear you, man.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, man. Is there anything you would like to plug before we wrap up here?
Yeah, so I co-host a podcast through the University of Georgia's athletic department. But it is not what you would think. It's not a Homer type of podcast. Me and DJ Shockley have a lot of great guests. Just this past week, we had Malcolm Mitchell, who is a Super Bowl champion, but also a two-time author now, children's books, former Georgia player, and just doing some really great things for literacy and raising awareness for that. And he has, you know, a lot of these are stories. We had Ryan McGee on, and we talked about NASCAR, you know, and it's not just Georgia guys on the show. So a lot, if you go back through some of those episodes, you can find it on the Georgia Bulldogs podcast network. It's called Shock and Ship. And if you want to check that out and check out some of the stories that we've had on there, it's great fun.
All right. Well, go do that. Keep up the great work, my friend, and enjoy the whatever snow you're getting in Atlanta. What is it? I miss it at this point. Now I'm in Knoxville, so we're actually getting real snow. What the icy rain, the nasty rain that just makes everybody drive worse than they normally do.
Yeah, that quarter inch of ice and sleet that will shut down everything, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Wes, like I said, keep up the great work, my friend, and good luck to you in 2021, and we'll touch base again soon.
You as well. Take care, Chase.
All right, the sports reporters are here. We're assembling. It is a gloomy Friday afternoon in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's a gloomy time, I think, across the country as a whole with this kind of week. I don't really know of a better way to frame it. Andrew Hammond is here, as he always is, in the Northwest. Andrew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm tired as hell, but, you know, I'm surviving.
I feel you, man. We're almost there. The week's almost over. Up there in New York City, Bob Silverman of the Daily Beast. Bob, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm good. I have my show sheet in front of me, but like I just felt with everything going on this week that I would rather just kind of talk it out. I think that is, it's sports, because if you say it's sports before, kind of like in the South, if you say something really offensive, but you say, bless your heart, at the end of it, it negates whatever offensive thing you said before it. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to say sports and talk about what's going on in the country at the moment. Andrew, when you, like, one of the things that I thought about a lot was just how long Wednesday felt. Like, that day just never ended, and it was just kind of crazy just how long of a day that actually was. Where are you at as of right now with everything that happened this week?
Tired. I hate repeating that, but I mean, it's one of those weeks where you're at a point where you're like, you know what? I don't know. For some people, I don't know what the bottom is. And watching all of that go down, and because I was, you know, I'll be a little transparent here. I was supposed to record a podcast that was supposed to be like the new episode of, or the new quote unquote season for my show was supposed to start today. And I was going to record it on Wednesday, and I had everything ready to go, and I'm watching all this go down, and it might have been an hour after like the initial barrier breaking, so to speak, and I'm like, you know what, I can't. And this is before, you know, people are getting ushered off the Senate and House floor, and I'm just like, you know what, this is going to be a long 13 days, and I hope people are kind to themselves and each other. Because and that's the thing, and I don't want to like hog all the time, but like 65-70% of this country actually gives a shit about each other and about everything that's going on, and it's this 35-30% that is just screwing everything up for the rest of us. And it's exhausting. It's just so damn exhausting. And I'm just at a point where I'm like, okay, can we just send like the other 30-35% that really don't give a damn about any of us? Can we just like send them to an island? I mean, it's exhausting, and it's a struggle, but we're going to be okay.
I think the last part, we're going to be okay. It feels like the last whimper of all this. Bob, do you agree? Do you feel like this is the last little bit, or no? Oh no.
I was going to be optimistic. Bob's just going to shit on my optimism.
Yeah.
I just, while listening to Andrew, I couldn't help but think of a something that my mom usually says, which is, it would really be a wonderful world if it weren't for simple people. And I think that's correct. In some, I was talking to my father before last night. My dad is 92 years old, and therefore has seen some shit.
You sound far away right now, Bob, by the way.
Emotionally or just physically?
You sound far away on audio wise.
Hold on. I'm plugged in. I'm plugged in all the way. Is the audio just bad?
I don't know. Andrew, does it sound? How does it sound on your end? This is all live. This is great. Yeah. Did we lose Andrew? Is Andrew here? What is happening?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No. That you're back now, Bob. It was like yeah.
Good. Here's, I mean, the basic gist of it is, I mean, here's a note of optimism, sort of. I was talking with my father, you know, he is a longtime leftist, and to a degree, my politics are absolutely shaped by his, and by other factors as well, but definitely by his. And we were just on the phone being like, well, you know, a small beer hall putsch is probably not the best way to get through a Wednesday, but if nothing else, it confirms that we were right the whole time. Every time we railed against the fascist underpinnings of this country or the ways in which that kindly American neighbors would absolutely turn on one another given the right conditions, and we were laughed off to say being extremists or hyperbolic or something like that, I just want to say I'm not happy about it, but at least I'm right. At least this proves that I was right. This is something that, like, actually an old acting teacher told me way back when. What he said was, I was complaining about some stupid part of the pedagogy and you know, cussing a blue streak and whining and fetching and the whole thing. And he lets me talk myself until I exhaust myself out. And then he says to me, Bob, you know, at very few moments in life do you get to be happy and right at the same time. You may be right here, but it doesn't seem to be making you very happy. So, pick a side. And I think he was right about this. This is Larry Hecht, who was an acting teacher of mine in San Francisco, and he went to star as the dad in Scream 1 and 3, for all you Scream fans out there. But, I'm not happy about any of this, but for fuck's sake, I was right. And all of us other, you know, red diaper babies, we were honking right. If you haven't seen it yet, I'd like to direct everyone to the intro, which is floating around on social media from Bill Simmons' podcast. Not to direct your listeners to a different podcast.
Yeah, what are you doing?
He expresses a certain amount of dismay about the future of America and says he does not feel qualified to discuss it. And then it cuts off with it at about the 1 minute and 20 second mark with, but first, Pearl Jam.
Wait, is this the episode where it's like a sad day for our country? But
it's today's episode.
The Redraftables.
Yeah.
No, that's the best podcast title of all time. Nothing will ever top that. It was like a dark day for America, but also the 2005 Redraftables.
No, this is a new one this morning.
Oh, I didn't know he had a new one. Oh, no.
This is a new pod episode this morning. So it's quite delightful. In any case, what are my thoughts? My thoughts are the Knicks are 5-3. Very complimentary. I always thought, like, the only way the Knicks will be a contending team is if everything goes completely to shit. And well, you know, here we are. Yeah. Have you considered Julius Randle as one of the archangels of the apocalypse? No, but maybe we should have.
Hmm. I was still perplexed at what was happening because I didn't take it all that seriously when I was just reading that there were some people trying to seize the Capitol, and I was just like, oh, just a couple weirdos doing some crimes, and I just didn't think anything of it. And then it just, you're scrolling and you're watching the news and you're just suddenly engulfed in this like insane thing that you never thought you would see. And then like you said, it was just one of those things where it just we shouldn't be surprised that it just finally happened, right, Andrew?
I let me just say one thing. As someone who's doing some reporting on online spaces right now, this is all they've been talking about for 2 months. Like every single person who's on the disinformation beat saw this coming a mile away and tried to warn people. Like the Civil War talk has been everywhere. It was important. Now, granted, most people don't venture into those spaces, and I wouldn't recommend that they do. This is not an attempt to critique anyone who felt surprised by how badly things went. But, oh boy, the writing was on the wall. It was scrawled on the wall in, like, bright red spray paint. They were very public about their intentions about what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Andrew, I cut you off.
No, you're good. You're good. No, I mean, it's... How do I put it? I mean, Bob, one line Bob said, and I don't want to give him too much credit for anything because I'm still mad about Willem Dafoe stuff. But
that's what you're mad about, Bob. Even he took it to another level this week.
I know. I've got backing from some fancy corporate entities here for the pod. Can we get Willem on the podcast as guest?
No.
That sounds awful. I can't do it.
You not want to have Willem Dafoe as a guest in the pod? He seems like a delightful man.
I don't trust you, Bob. I don't trust you.
Facts.
Well, that's fair.
I was just going to say, you hate being right because we knew this was going to happen. I mean, and this isn't just because one person got elected and one person lost the election. This has been a powder keg that hasn't been fully put out yet, by the way. This is a powder keg that's been building for about 12 years now. I mean, think about this. When Obama was president and they were doing Affordable Care Act, they were doing all these things. The far right and these right-wing nut jobs, they couldn't brand him as a quote-unquote. So, I mean, they tried branding him as a socialist, but, I mean, that's kid stuff for them. That is, you know, it is right-wing extremism. It's birtherism. It is all of this stuff that's been building for years. And they hung Obama in effigy outside the White House. And this was, I want to say, it was right before he was running for election again, or when he was looking back in 2016. He talked about how one time he saw himself being burned or being hung in effigy outside the White House, but it was in the view of where Sasha and Malia had their little playset. So he could see the playset. They weren't out there at the time, thank God. But you see the playset. And then when you look past it towards the gates and the fence, there's people outside protesting against him. And I remember him saying that. And I think this was right before Trump got elected. And I remember thinking, it's going to be 4 years of this. And am I shocked at the timing of it? No. But all of this was inevitable because you're being fueled for years and years and years on this stuff. And the issue is nobody's checking it. These people are getting interviewed. I mean, I don't know if I can say this on the podcast, but you know what? Fuck Jimmy Fallon. because I mean, it's and all of
you know, they edited the haircuts aloud online.
Oh, yeah.
Did they really?
If you want to watch. You still find it somewhere on the internet.
Yeah.
But if you go to the NBC official site and you want to watch that interview, you can edit it.
Yeah, it's not there. But the thing is that we all saw this coming. And I remember talking to a friend of mine, and this was 2017, 2018, and I told him, watch when, because it was Trump approved something from the Democrats, and it was like 2 days of Republicans just furious. I mean, they were pissed. And I told him, I said, watch them turn. Watch them turn, and Donald Trump is going to lose the party. Well, it took a while, but they fully turned. And, I mean, these people still want civil war, because for some reason they think that everything belongs to them when it doesn't. And now we're looking at people who, these people talking about respecting the flag, you know, all of this crap, but you're going into federal spaces. You're trying to do this invasion or an insurrection or whatever the hell you want to call it, and have these people turned into freaking fourth graders at a goddamn field trip, just taking pictures and taking pictures next to monuments. And I'm sitting here going, okay, hold on. You spent all these times on podcasts, listening to all this right-wing, you know, bullcrap, and you're reading all these blogs about how we need to take down the establishment. Dog, you really sat there talking about a civil war. Half these people acting like they're on a damn field trip. There's no way you are going to win that battle. Like, you want to try and hold people hostage? I mean, they were literally going to kidnap Democrat lawmakers. Like, that part still shakes me. They were going to kidnap Democratic lawmakers, talking about trial by combat. Like, what in the hell? Like, if you are an American, if you are truly an American, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, you should be absolutely furious right now. And the frustrating thing about all of this is that they went into the Senate chambers, and you had some of these people blaming Antifa. Mind you, this was not even 24 hours after they were egging them on. How detached from reality must you be that you see essential anarchy at the nation's capital, and you're just like, oh, no, never mind, it was the other side. Hold on. Were you saying that when you were being ushered off the Senate floor and Dear Leader is watching this? Oh, by the way, he also sent them there. So we're inciting a riot. We're doing all this crap. Let that be Black Lives Matter. Let that be quote unquote left wing supporters. Like, I mean, just let it be these people that are supposed to be going into the, you know, let it be all these people that small town America is supposed to fear, the elitists, the what are those people called? The
Jews, I think that's one of those.
Well, no, I mean, well, then that's the thing that's so just.
Elitist is code for Jews. I just have to say that. Like, elitist is like just a weird, right, well, water rebooting of anti-Semitism.
Right. It's
just,
and here's the thing. There were people, I saw this today and I got pissed off again, so I'm sorry if I'm going on this rant.
No,
but
this is good.
This shit
that
needs to be
good,
said.
But this is important.
All right. But here's the, there was a couple that took a private goddamn jet from California to D.C. to be a part of an insurrection. And mind you, this summer they were talking about, oh, they flew Antifa in. What? Really? And we're taking private jets to insurrections? Like, this is the goddamn Cotton Bowl? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm sorry that I'm cussing so much, but this is like 6 years of frustration with a president and or once candidate, now president, now going to be former president, that literally let all of this happen because he doesn't give a damn about anybody but himself. And he sent people to the Capitol. People died on his watch and at his hand, and fuck.
It's very bad. 4,000 Americans died to the COVID. I mean, we just sort of.
Accept. By the way, we've hit the 4,000 mark twice.
Yeah.
We've hit the 4,000 mark.
That's just a thing that happens now.
We're very desensitized to it. We've moved on.
It's I forget who said it. I'm stealing this line. It wasn't me. It was, but the line that I keep coming back to is, we spent months hunkered down in a fallout shelter, and now we've just decided to live in the fallout.
Yep.
I also think, Andrew, about this, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot, is how we rebuild and how we move past a lot of this, and how you rationalize 73 million people wanting 4 more years of this. And this is something that I struggle with a lot. Just being in the South and being Southern and having just a lot of family and friends who voted for 45 again. And it's hard. And I'm still not sure what to do about it. I'm still just incredibly concerned, because one of the biggest things to me is I just wish I could pull social media and their cable news channels from there. Like, that would solve a lot of the problems here.
It's a huge, I mean, one thing I wanted to mention about, like, the taking of selfies, like all those shots yesterday, these LARPers suddenly running around and,
I mean, some of that was objectively hilarious. Like, that dude literally smiling for the camera while he's walking out with a lectern. Like, literally smiling for the camera. Like,
it's funny in the I'm becoming the Joker kind of way.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
But, like, Charlie Warzel over at the New York Times wrote an op-ed about this. And it's that they were literally doing it for the gram at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, no, you cannot. I mean, there are a couple of steps with which this armed, which if there were more support from a couple of institutions, say, like, more than the cops sort of taking selfies with the protesters, for example, or more than the military, like, there was a hot minute where this actually could have turned into a full blown actual coup instead of a fake.
Oh, yeah.
But the degree to which, and I think what's important to remember, when I say that they're doing it for the gram, I'm not saying that to minimize their actions in the least. What I'm saying is that those are trophies that will be shared in the forums and the online spaces in which people like who believe this congregate, and they will talk about this for a long ass time.
Is a win for them.
This is absolutely a win for them. This is a win. And if you don't think that they are plotting the next one right now, you are not paying attention. I am not one to advocate for increased government surveillance or clamp down on all kinds of civil liberties. But for a long time now, the supposed bastions of power, you know, the FBI, the CIA, all of these incredibly well-equipped government institutions meant to protect, safeguard American citizens have been outright ignoring the rise of far-right and explicitly white nationalist extremists. And so they have grown and festered and prospered, and they are continuing to do so. Taking away the megaphones that they have on the internet is one step, and a crucial one, because, you know, a decade ago, all of these cranks would be reduced to, like, you know, hand churning out mimeographed pamphlets. Now they have millions upon millions of followers on various platforms. Deplatforming works. It is not a violation of their First Amendment rights to say, you have a right to speak. You just don't get to have the right to amass an audience of 1 million people who you can speak to with the click of the button. And zero moderation, or practically zero moderation, by all of these platforms, which are incredibly complicit in the rise of the far right because it made them money. And every time I hear some chud complaining about how social media is biased against conservatives, it's as laughable as the dude holding the lectern. They look at the Daily Leaders on Facebook engagement any day. It's Dan Bongino and the freaking president, or Ben Shapiro. look at YouTube, which is a cesspool of content rating from like ANCAP libertarian nonsense to straight up white nationalism. They control those mediums without a doubt, because those mediums are designed to appeal to baser inflammatory instincts, and so baser inflammatory content tends to proliferate. And no amount of moderation by their precious, precious algorithms has been able to tamp that down. That's my
problem. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's quite bad. Whether or not, like, it's going to take a generation for people to sort of let go, like, realize the degree that they were lied to and manipulated by truly, truly monstrous people for profit. I don't know if we can. I'd like to think we can.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I think it comes down to, Andrew, sorry to cut you off, but, like, from my perspective, I think it comes down to what they really were before it. Like, that is something I think about a lot. It was, like, this always there? Or have they just been, like, bamboozled over the last 4 years and just been fed bullshit for years?
Oh, buddy, it's long before the last 4 years.
But see, that, I don't know. Like, I don't I struggle with that because I have family like that, and I have friends. I don't know.
It's like all of these, look, all these sentiments go back to the founding of American history. Every moment of quote-unquote progress for people of color, for non, you know, anyone besides a WASP religiously, for women, for people who aren't straight, has been met by a giant backlash by the minority. That has happened at every turn in American history, and it will keep happening. This is just the latest iteration. So, you know, you beat on, boats against the current, and keep striving for something better. But it's always been there. There are a number of conditions that have made it, that have allowed these people to congregate and isolate and be lied to. And there are conditions that have made them want to believe those lies. But the underlying sentiments that allowed them to be receptive to this horseshit, that's always been. And it goes back to the founding of America.
Andrew, what do you think? I know, well, I just cut you off there. Sorry.
I know, you're good. The thing that, and Bob nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. But what they want from the mainstream media is they want their propaganda, they want their bullshit on those networks. They just don't want to be checked. That's the thing. They want all their propaganda, all their bull crap. They want them on MSNBC. They want them on CNN. They want them on all these major news outlets. The issue is it's false information, it's borderline racist information, and all of this stuff, and it's rooted in evil, and they don't want to get checked on it. That is the biggest problem, is that they don't want to get checked on it, or they know that they're going to get checked on it. And so it is this whiny bull crap that they're saying that, oh, well, nobody cares about us. I'm sorry, you're a white man in America. Nobody has forgotten about you. Literally, you have an express lane once you get out of the freaking womb. They talk about how forgotten they are. This is a group of people that they were born a base or two ahead of everybody else. And it's not their fault that other people recognize that and then want to just give the same people on this earth an advantage. Yet you guys are like, oh, well, that's not fair. That's not, no, you can't have everything your way. And it's crazy that they're sitting there talking about this is the people's house. It absolutely is. Do you want me to go into your house and just start ransacking shit because of what? Because literally there were more people that voted for the other guy and not yours? Oh, and then yeah, your full-on insurrection doesn't happen because Mike Pence, as much as he has sided with Trump, he knew in his heart of hearts that there was no way on God's green earth that he could say that these votes would not be counted because, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about this or trying to make jokes about this, he knows exactly what would happen if he said no. And if he says no, if Katie bar the door, you can't do anything. He would literally run out of there and watch all this shit go down. He knew morally he could not do it. And Trump pushed him for 4 years. He pushed that man for 4 years, pushed and prodded. And the one moment he thought Pence was going to finally press the red button, and it's basically like the devil and the angel on the shoulder. That's what this basically has been from Mike Pence. I'm not defending Mike Pence. I'm just making the point that Trump pushed this man so far to the edge, and Pence finally realized, oh, shit.
I think Pence always knew. He just had an opening to finally do it because the power is just gone. And that's something I've noticed is that guys are coming out more because they actually are no longer fearful of him because he's literally moving on. They're like, we have two
more
weeks.
I don't think it's fearful. I think it was fearful. I think Pence was on board.
I don't know.
But then he realized, I cannot do this. Like, he realized that morally, I cannot do this. Because, I mean, Pence has been complicit for so much.
Yeah.
He is not a sacred cow in this. I'm not defending him. All I'm saying is he's been a part of so much.
Remember the little things? He just wouldn't eat alone with women. Remember when simpler times?
Mother's food must be hot. Everybody knows.
But he ended up going.
Looks like Race Bannon.
He absolutely is Race Bannon, motherfucker. But he was pushed to the point, and it was the one thing that he could not do because in his heart of hearts, no matter what he does in his life, he could not do like he's always going to, whether it's in his view or whatever, he's always going to do the right thing, whether he believes in that or not, or whether it's morally right for his morals, he's going to do the right thing. Trump pushed him so far and so much because he knew what was coming. I mean, they all knew what was coming. If he doesn't certify it, you literally have a fucking revolution in the Capitol. And
there's a story about back in 2017. There were a bunch of survivors there. And they were going around saying, like, yeah, it's a violation of occupational ethics to diagnose someone without treatment. But we are not diagnosing the person. We are saying that public statements and acts are an incitement to violence. Like, it's obvious to anyone who is complete, like, I am a little more cynical about Benson's motivations. I think he sat down with some Republican power brokers and said, if you want to get the fucking nomination, to pull it from you put a stop to this. I think it was an entirely cynical political factor.
I would agree with the cynical part of it. I agree.
I kind of think he was told by the powers that be that if they want their help, because he absolutely is running. So he was told, if you want that, you stop this now.
Yeah.
I don't think he was close to any kind of undertaking, but I think he thought he'd get away with it.
Well, we have to wrap up here, guys. But final notes. Andrew, any final words before we wrap up the last independent Chase Thomas podcast? Andrew, any advice or anything you would like to say to wrap up here?
All I'm going to say is this. And I know we didn't get a chance to actually like touch on this, but can we just talk about the feckless and slimy and I really hate saying it like this, but the complete wussification of every single person in the Trump administration is resigning instead of actually taking a vote. Like, you have a chance. Like, you are not going to be a hero in this. Let's just get that clear right now. You are not going to be a hero. We just want you. The bar is entirely too low for you at this point. Just do the right thing. Just vote the man out. Take a majority. But and they're all leaving. And everybody's like, No. This is completely designed. This is by design. So at the end, it's literally going to be a fucking standoff where it's just him and the entire United States government. And I, for one, I am absolutely furious because it should have never gotten to this point. And I hope every Republican, independent, and every person in government that actually let him get away with this stuff and didn't offer any resistance, I'm sorry, you need to be primaried, you need to be voted out, and you need to leave D.C. right fucking now. Other than that, I'm good.
Bob, closing words.
As I mentioned earlier, the Knicks are 5-3. It's very rare. Many people are saying that the Knicks are a championship contender. I don't want to go that far. It's a bit early right now. Or that Luka Doncic is actually just a four-man series Orlando. You know, these are strong takes, and probably for me to put the kibosh on the take that powerful. But I think it's worth having that discussion. And if you can't have that discussion, are you really American anymore? The other thing that we're treating that a chance to go into is the fact that the president pardoned and he was trying to strong arm the Georgia Secretary of State and getting the election voters. That was fun. That to me was good. I enjoyed hearing the president to strip the parts and then saying excuse me while after he stepped on the goose while trying to commit sins. That to me was a delightful moment from earlier this week, which I believe is 10,000.
There you go. All right. For that guy up there in the Northeast, Bob Silverman, for Andrew up there in the Northwest of the Tacoma News Tribune, for myself down here in Knoxville, Tennessee, thank you, as always, fellas, for making the time, especially under these kind of circumstances. Hope for the best. Hope we keep moving.
Yeah, don't finish that sentence, man.
Nah.
Axiom has, you know how that axiom goes.
Yeah, all right. Well, either way, you guys try and have a good weekend. All that good stuff. Enjoy it. Have some wine soda that Bob loves. And we'll be back next week. All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast. And I'm now joined by Martin Frank, Eagles beat writer of the Delaware News Journal. Martin, how's it going?
It's kind of been a hectic week considering that.
Well, hold on. What's going on in Philly? What could you possibly be talking about, Martin? What is possibly going on in Philadelphia that's got your attention and got fans' attention?
Well, there's all this talk about being their final game. They're also looking for a new defensive coordinator, possibly a new offensive coordinator, and they have to figure out what they want to do with quarterback. And yeah, it's kind of been interesting.
Small potatoes.
Exactly. For a 4-11-1 team, it seems to be a lot of drama.
What do you think ultimately happens with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz? What is your gut telling you on that?
My gut is telling me that they're both back, and the Eagles are going to try to make it work with Wentz as the quarterback. I think the whole thing about benching Carson, you know, beginning in the second half against the Packers on December 6th, was kind of about him just kind of stepping back, you know, trying to see what he was doing wrong and, you know, possibly, you know, not getting them hurt anymore because their offensive line was a total mess this year because, you know, Jason Kelce, the center, was the only projected starter who played in every game this season. I mean, you know, Wentz was on pace to be sacked close to 70 times this season. As it is, he led the NFL with being sacked 50 times, and he only played in 12 games. You know, so the goal for them is to see if he can come back and find the form that he had when he was on his way to winning the MVP in 2017. And, you know, even the last four games of the 2019 season where, you know, he pretty much had to carry the team on his back to win each game and make the playoffs. You know, the Eagles are convinced that, you know, that quarterback is still there. They just have to figure out a way to find it. Of course, they're also stuck because of his contract, you know, which makes it virtually impossible for them to release him and makes it really difficult for them to trade him. So, you know, it's in their best interest, obviously, to make sure to try to make it work with Wentz. And, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess. I mean, you know, April is a long ways away, and, you know, there's always trades are possible, depending on how desperate a team is and you know, to get someone like Wentz and how much they're willing to offer in return. You know, there are just so many different variables. But the easiest and the one that's most palatable for the Eagles is to have Wentz back.
But does Wentz want that? Would he sign up for Doug? If he comes back, would Peterson be a part of the package, or would he be like, the only way I'm coming back is if Doug Peterson is not my head coach anymore?
I don't think that is really the either or for Wentz.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, I think Peterson would probably be the best coach for Wentz because, you know, they have that relationship. I just think that, you know, there's been talk, obviously, Chris Mortensen had said that, you know, the relationship between Wentz and Peterson is fractured beyond repair and everything. You know, I think there are issues that have to be resolved during these next few months. I mean, one of them is, you know, Wentz has to figure out, you know, what can change in the offense to make it better for him. Peterson has to figure out, like, how can he kind of make the offense better for Wentz? And that could include having, you know, changing, you know, his coaching staff, you know, with an offensive coordinator, with maybe a different quarterbacks coach. I don't think Wentz would want to come back if he feels like he would have to compete with Jalen Hurts for the starting job. I kind of get the sense that, you know, he's not really up for a competition. You know, he's not up for not knowing that he would be the starter, I guess is how I should say it. It just seems like, you know, for Wentz to be all in, he has to be told, or he has to be at least shown, that the Eagles are committed to him being the starting quarterback in 2021.
Do you think that's ultimately what happens?
It depends. I mean, I wish I could.
Because then you just piss off Jalen Hurts again. And he's already really thrilled, by the way. I don't know if you knew this or not, but Jalen Hurts, really loving how the season ended for him.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows, you know, the answer. If that's, you know, right now, sitting here on January 8th, exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I think there are still cards that the Eagles need to play, and you know, it's not like Wentz has a whole lot of leverage. I mean, sure, he can want to be traded, and sure, he can say, you know, this and that and get me out of here, but I mean, you know, if the Eagles were to trade him, you know, they would still have like a $34 million dead money cap hit, so why would the Eagles want to trade him for, you know, to see him flourish with another team, and they still have to, you know, this $34 million, you know, dead cap charge, dead money charge. You know, they could obviously, you know, say, all right, well, we're not going to trade you. You can just sit out. And after next season, you know, we can move you or try to do something. So, you know, Wentz doesn't have a ton of leverage in this situation. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, if the Eagles are really committed to Wentz as their quarterback going forward, then they're going to find a way to do it.
Who do your readers want to see happen? Like, what does it seem like the sentiment is from Eagles fans? What do they ultimate? What is there a consensus on what they prefer?
I think a lot of them are fed up with Wentz. I think number one, you know, he had an awful season. Number two, you know, they're not pleased with him about these reports that he wants out. But there are quite a few sympathizers who feel, you know, that Wentz was put in a really bad situation. I mean, you know, the offensive line, like I mentioned earlier, has been awful. You know, you were down to your third left tackle. You know, you were playing a guy in the finale at right tackle who was like, you know, hadn't started a game since he was at Army in 2017. You know, it was just a really bad situation for any quarterback. And, you know, Wentz bore the brunt of that, obviously, through the first 12 games. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are kind of sympathetic and say, well, you know, if you had a decent offensive line, if you had decent wide receivers to work with, you know, you got to remember also that coming into the season, the Eagles were going to have three veteran wide receivers in DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, who was kind of, they thought might miss the first two or three games while he recovered from his foot surgery, and Marquise Goodwin, who they traded for from the 49ers. Well, as it turned out, you know, Goodwin opted out of the season. Jeffrey took like 8 or 9 games before he was ready to return. And DeSean got hurt, you know, early in the season and then again midway through the season. So basically they had rookies at wide receiver and a guy, Travis Fulgham, who they promoted from the practice squad. So not only did he not have an offensive line to protect him, he had no receivers to throw to, mostly. So, yeah, it was. I think a lot of people are kind of fed up with Wentz, but I think there are also a lot of who sympathize with what he had to deal with.
All right, last question, we'll wrap up here. Jim Schwartz, if they keep Wentz, let's just operate under the assumption that Wentz and Peterson are both back, Howie Roseman's still GM, who do they target to replace him? Scangarello's gone, Morningweg's gone, everyone's gone, but these guys are there. Who do they target to replace Jim Schwartz?
As defensive coordinator?
Yes.
I think there are a lot of people. I think
Jim Castillo, I think, is number one, right?
What's that?
Jim Castillo, number one?
Actually, I think they're going to go after somebody who's got...
Juan Castillo, excuse me. I thought it was Jim. Yeah, Jim Washburn and Juan... Oh, I get those backed up. Juan Castillo.
Yeah, that's who I thought you were...
There's Jim Washburn and Juan Castillo, and I just, like, combined their names, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think they're going to do that, but they're going to go after, like, their defensive coordinator, Schwartz, for example, had full autonomy because Peterson's an offensive-minded coach. And, you know, assuming that Peterson's back, which every indication is that he is, he's going to want a similar type of defensive coordinator that he can rely on. So, you know, there are a bunch of ex-head coaches who have a strong defensive background. I mean, you look at Matt Patricia, who got fired by the Lions. He was Bill Belichick's defensive coordinator for 6 or 7 years, and, you know, they were at least getting to the AFC Championship game, if not winning the Super Bowl. There's also two guys.
You have Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn, that's another one. That's who I was like on the tip of my tongue, and I couldn't remember it right off the top of my head, but yeah, he would be one of the first candidates. You know, they could go with Gus Bradley, you know, if they want to lure him away from somewhere. You know, I think they're going to go for someone kind of in the Schwartz mold, being like an experienced guy who can run the defense and would get full autonomy and stuff like that. I don't think they're going to go with a young, you know, former assistant, like position coach, whether it's college or the NFL. I think they're going to go with someone who's really experienced. And there are quite a few guys like that out there, obviously.
All right. Well, Martin, what can we check out from you this week at Delaware Online?
Oh, a lot of stuff. The whole Wentz, Jalen Hurts saga. There was something today about like 7 plays that pretty much doomed their season. You know, it was kind of a whole mess. It was, you know, a column on the whole, you know, what the difference is between getting the number six pick by losing to Washington or getting the number nine pick by winning. Julio Jones obviously was one of the number six picks, you know, who became a superstar and everything. So, I mean, it did make a difference. So, yeah, a lot of stuff like that, basically.
All right. Well, go do that. Keep up the great work, sir. And try and calm things down in Philly. They need to calm it down. Yeah. Too much drama.
I don't think that will ever happen here.
Oh, I don't know. But, who knows? The Philly fans, they seem chill. They seem rational. Yeah, it'll be okay. Like,
yeah, right. That's like one of the things about the Eagles. Even when they're awful, they're still like on the tip of everybody's tongue. And
go Birds, right? Go Birds. Exactly. All the time. You love it. All right. Well, I appreciate the time, Martin, and we'll have to check back again soon when it's on fire once more in Philadelphia.
All right. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.